It looks like sermon audio is down. So what we're going to do is we're going to record it and then just upload it, and this way we can begin and don't have to keep you longer than necessary. Let us begin with a word of prayer, shall we? Our Heavenly Father, we thank you that you are building your kingdom unto the ends of this earth. Thank you for the many encouraging things that are happening around the world. We bring once again our own nation, and we ask you again to have mercy upon us, to not withdraw or knock over the lampstand of this nation. Help us, O Lord, to walk in your ways, and at the same time, maybe be continuously encouraged by the activity around the world for the glory of your name and for the good of your church. We ask it in Jesus' most precious name. Amen. So I had the privilege of going to Europe, mainly went as a as a board member of Come Over and Help, that mainly works in Eastern Europe. But usually when I go, I want to cover as many bases as possible, so make the most of the time. So this time I began the trip with the Czech Republic. Or in other words, I landed in my hometown Linz, went to my mother's apartment, took a shower, repacked, and drove right to the Czech Republic a couple of hours later, about an hour away. I lived or I grew up very close to the Czech and German border, so I went across the border into the Czech Republic. This is Český Krumlov, which is the area where I went. Let me just see if I can make this any better. So the reason why I went to the Czech Republic, over the course of the last few years, groups from Austria and Germany have kind of gotten a little book that I've written years ago in German into their hands. It's a book about the necessity of Christian education. It's called God or Pharaoh, Who Owns Our Children? And it's been written about Christian education, but it's really an introduction to the Reformed understanding of biblical Christianity. And some of these groups have gotten this book into their hands and read it, and then it started with one blog, Reformed blog or vlog or whatever they call it, interviewing me, a Reformed group in Vienna, and putting it on the internet, and then more people saw it, and then groups started to contact me from Austria and from Germany, how they can become Reformed churches. And because I cannot do this from thousands of miles away, and I don't want to, I had the idea, I've kind of tried to disciple them from far away, but I had the idea to bring them all together in one point, bring them together with the experienced brothers in Germany, connect them all, and I'd be out of the equation. So I would, planned a little mini conference for the leaders, only for the leaders and some of their wives, of these groups, and we met in the Czech Republic for 3 days, and we gave talks about the essentials or the basics of the Reformed faith, and we had very good fellowship. And this is again Český Krumlov, the area there. It's all very old. The Czech Republic, very close to the Austrian border. And here's another view of that. And here is the format of the conference. So when I say conference, I'm not talking like Ligonier conference, 5,000 people. I'm talking about 30, 40 people, all leaders of the various groups, and also a guy who seems to be omnipresent. Here, this is Reverend Ramanen from Little Farms OPC. He has a big heart for missions, and he came with me. And we met with these groups and tried to give them a primer on the Reformed faith and talk with them about how they can move forward being Reformed churches. This gentleman here was a guru. He was a Far Eastern guru. And he basically led a cult, a New Age cult, kind of mixing of Buddhism, Hinduism, and New Age stuff. And they all moved together to an area in Eastern Europe, close to Berlin. And they became a commune there. And God, in his providence, led about 80% of them. We're talking a group of a few hundred. Led about 80% of them together to become believers in Jesus Christ, The other 20% moved away angrily. But these people were then brand new Christians, and they kind of got their books, my book, in their hand, and they said right away, we want to be a Christian church and we want to start a Christian school. So these guys, that's the whole group here and here, they came and they wanted to learn how to be a Reformed church. Then there are groups from Austria, here, 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 most of them from around Vienna, who want to be Reformed churches. And I connected them with the Germans. Here's one of the German pastors, a friend of mine, Ludwig Rühle. And teaching here is Dr. Jürgen Burkhard Klautke, who's the president, the retiring president of the seminary in Germany. So I have connected them all, had these guys give talks, and I gave two talks myself. And once, now that these guys are connected, I can move out of this equation since I'm so far away. And seven, I think, have already signed up to be students at the Reformed Seminary in Gießen, Germany, where I also teach about 1 hour north of Frankfurt. Here is again Dr. Klautke. He is the retiring president of the seminary in Germany. Yeah, thanks. And here he is teaching on the foundations of covenant theology. I have invited him to come here as soon as the vaccine requirement for the U.S. will be lifted. He's ready to come. He has been to the U.S. many times. And here he's teaching. And as you can see, they're all listening very attentively. So then when this conference was over, and it was very, very encouraging, this conference, except for the part that my room was over a discotheque. So sleep was not really a good thing to be had, but that's the usual things that come with traveling around in the world. I raced to Prague for Come Over and Help to visit a missionary there, Reverend Farnik. He's an OPC missionary in the capital of the Czech Republic, in Prague. And he, I have to say, this man is remarkable. He's not a recent missionary to the Czech Republic. He has been there with his family for 36 years. And if you do the math, you know that Czech Republic has been communist back then. So he basically went into the Czech Republic kind of undercover while it was still communist. He was involved in some music program or opera program because he's very knowledgeable in this area. And faithfully has worked there in the Czech Republic for 36 years and has planted a mega church of about 20. This is the reality in many places in Europe. The Czech Republic is one of the most secular places in the world. And I got to tell you, it takes a specific kind of man or missionaries who do that. And the Farniks, he and his wife and children, they are the right kinds of people. They're faithful. They're kind, they're unmovable in doctrine, they're very much liked. There's a few people here now. The church is now a little bit bigger because they have Ukrainian refugees. As small and as little funds that they have, they're already caring for Ukrainian refugees, which are now all over Europe because of the war. Next one, please. So, and here we were after the worship service. This is Reverend Farnik, this is his son, and this is a very interesting guy. That's a neighbor. And he came along for the ride to the church. And this is an interesting guy. He's a Jewish businessman from New York, New York. You know, and that's how he talked. And he's a very, very wealthy man. Not a believer, but very open. And I saw Reverend Farnik interacting with him. He came then back with us to Reverend Farnik's house to have lunch. And he's a quite influential guy. He had started his first investment bank in his 20s. And we talked a lot about the gospel, and we also talked about world politics and the financial markets. But this man knows how to have an open house, how to deal with new believers or with unbelievers. I was very impressed with this family. They also had a very nice little dog. As you know, I'm not exactly a dog person, but that dog was more like a cat. So that's why I liked him. We go to the next one. Then I was off to Latvia. Next one. So off the airport, we went right to a hockey game in Riga. The pastors in Latvia and myself. And I'm just showing you this, first of all, because it was a lot of fun. But secondly, you see, they play in a very small arena here. That's basically their practice arena of the local hockey school. And they couldn't play in their big arena because energy prices in Europe have about 7 to 10-fold because of the whole Ukrainian conflict. And not even this is almost NHL level, AHL level. These guys played in the KHL. They don't play in that league anymore because it's a Russian league. And secondly, they cannot afford to keep the lights on in the big arena. That's how bad the energy situation right now is in Europe. Let's go to the next one. This is Riga, Latvia, an old tramway, which I thought would be nice to take a photo of. And here's a building. This is a music conservatory. That's a university for music. And you see, here's the Latvian flag and here's the Ukrainian flag. And even on public transport, everywhere you can find the Ukrainian flag. So the Latvians are very afraid. They're one of the Baltic states, you know, at the Baltic Sea there, across from Sweden and Finland. That was part of the Soviet Union. They're very afraid, and they were afraid from the beginning. Once the Russians are done with Ukraine, he will come for the Baltics. And therefore, they're very, very closely aligned with the Ukrainians, and that's why you see the Ukrainian flag everywhere. I went to Riga to teach a course at the seminary on apologetics and hermeneutics, how to apologetics and worldview, how to defend the Christian faith, and it was a very good class, and I had good fellowship with the pastors, and I was ad hoc invited to a pastor's meeting, and I should speak about the dangers of theistic evolution. Of course, that was right up my alley. So we had this meeting with the pastors, and I was ready to take some flack, and I made the case for six-day creation, of course, which is the only biblical possibility of interpreting the first chapters of Genesis and beyond. And to my surprise, at the end, there was full harmony. One pastor came up. He said, "I'm now finally convinced of six-day creation." I don't know if that was because of the talk or because he read a book, because I also had brought them books in previous visits, Reverend Van Dudewaard's book, The New Adam. That is a very, very good book, and also a new one by a Canadian Reformed minister whose name I cannot think of right now. But these guys are solid there in Latvia. They're good guys. I don't know why they do not teach their own classes. They're definitely qualified. They're humble. They're hardworking. This is a city, Riga, the capital of Latvia, that has the same price levels as the rest of Europe, about the same price levels as here, and the pastors make between $1,000 and $2,000 a month. I don't know how they can make ends meet because living is very expensive. But with the little they have, these guys work tirelessly. All of their wives have to work so they can survive. So these are good men. It's always very encouraging to go. I'm actually, I think, the one who's encouraged most when I go. Next one, please. This is a park. I walk to seminary every day. It's about a half hour walk, and it's a nice walk. You know, I go through parks, and you see the boats here. It is a very, very beautiful town, and it is very encouraging to be there, and people are very, very nice, I have to say. And, you know, while I walk, I pray. That's a good way to kind of find a grounding in that area and not to just be in for a short time and then fly out again, but to really carry the burdens with these ministers here. The next one. This is Reverend Artis Chelmins, one of my best friends. He is the director, the president of the seminary there in Riga. He's a very, very godly man. I hope he is right now, or very soon he will be in the U.S. and in Canada. He can't come here for that visit. Faithful, sound, godly, and humble minister of the gospel. He took me to the seaside there. This is the Baltic Sea, and we took a long walk and talked strategy for the seminary and so forth. And, you know, this ugly face, let's go to the next one. And then it was off to Albania. I flew with Austrian Airlines. Please press it once again. Something happened there on this plane. When I was boarding pretty early in Vienna, and right where I sat, the flight attendants gathered around me, and we had a chat. I have to say, I was a pilot before, and I was also originally hired by Austrian Airlines. I didn't know them, but they were just talking, and they asked me, you know, all kinds of things where I'm going. And I said, look, I'm a pastor. I'm on a missionary and a missions trip here. And I see that one of them is very attentive and asks more questions. And when she comes by then, after we had taken off with the drink cart, she was down there at the drink cart. I was sitting right here. And I say, are you a Christian? And she said, yes, I am, but I've been damaged by a church. So I said, would you like to talk about it? And she said, yes, later. So they made their drink run, and I waited until she was back in the galley again. And then I took the boarding pass and write contact information of pastors in Austria and, you know, websites and all of that. And I go to the galley, and she said, I was just about to come to your seat, and she gives me a whole bag of those chocolates that they hand out. I still have them at home for the children, for my little children. Okay, I know I look very young. But anyway, so we talked about it, and she seemed to be sincere. She just, you know, ran into a situation in the church where, you know, in a situation that seemed to have been very cult-like. I want to be very careful because it's not always the church that's wrong. Sometimes those who are leave. But we had a very good conversation. I gave her the contact information to a good Reformed pastor in Vienna, Pastor Zoltau, who is a faithful Reformed Baptist brother. And then we parted ways, and I prayed for her. And but you see, I said to her, she said she's so discouraged. I said, well, so was I when I was boarding this plane, because I'm completely worn out. I did not want to go to Albania, and now I know why. This is an from eternity appointed meeting here, and I encouraged you, and you encouraged me. And so everything had changed before I had landed in Albania. I was fully motivated to get off the plane in Albania. This is the approach into Albania through Kosovo. You go in from Kosovo and North Macedonia. I don't know if you can see these beautiful mountains here and the sea right here. And so we landed in Albania, and then we went right from the airport after a quick lunch to meet with this illustrious gentleman, Reverend Bertie or Albert Kona. He is in Durrës, Albania, at the sea. Here he took us to a restaurant here. There I met with two other men from Come Over and Help, and we, who were already in Spain before, and they came to Albania, and there we met up. Excuse me. Reverend Kona and I went to seminary together in Greenville Seminary, and he's doing a marvelous work together with a Dutch gentleman, Mr. Gerard Wassink, and they're having churches there in Durrës, and they're doing a great publication ministry. They translate and publish Reformed works. They are working also together with some Brazilian pastors of the same denomination as the Sant Annas, who are in our congregation. And they're building a Reformed and Presbyterian denomination there. It was a very encouraging talk. And he took us to this wonderful restaurant at the seaside there. Maybe the next one. Here you see there's for children a little playground, and here probably hotels and apartments. So we sat there for a few hours and talked about the ministry. And then the waiter comes out with this humongous red snapper. Is that how you say it? Red snapper? And he said, this guy was still alive half an hour ago, and if we want to eat it. Well, first of all, I had compassion on the fellow. But secondly, we couldn't afford, because $60 for a kilogram. We said, thank you for showing it to us, but no thanks. But this is apparently that's kind of how they show their menu. And so I don't know if he actually was still alive at this point, but who knows. The next one, please. And then we went back to Tirana, and I made a friend, a very nice little cat who was always around me. And I sat outside, and I didn't know how dangerous the mosquitoes are in Tirana, and I was fully bitten by mosquitoes, but it was very much worth it to have fellowship with this little fellow there. So in Tirana, we met with brothers, pastors, elders, we were taken out to lunch. Please press again. Some might know this gentleman. This is Mr. Tom Moerdijk from the Free Reformed Church in Grand Rapids. And he's the father of Reverend Eric Moerdijk of the Free Reformed denomination. He's a board member at COA. We met up there and press it again. Some might know this gentleman. This is Mr. Raymond Roth. He's one of our project managers at COA. These are the two gentlemen. I think he's known by the Cutsleys, or their families known by the Cutsleys. So we met up and we were taken by these pastors and elders to lunch, a very nice restaurant. And this was my translator. I preached there on Sunday morning at on Psalm 11. And I got to tell you, I told him, I said, you're the best translator I ever had. You know I'm passionate sometimes with preaching. But boy, I looked like a paralyzed Northern German compared to this guy. I mean, I would preach my soul out. And he was twice as passionate. I mean, the guy would just, and always right. I mean, always the right emphasis. I said, man, which one of us preached, you know? And it was really amazing. These guys are like that. They're passionate. This is Pastor Andy, a very humble man. Now, these in Tirana are Reformed Baptists. But they are very good men, very godly men. They're very eager to learn. And they have just become Reformed in recent years. So we help them, we guide them, we connect them with the contacts we already have. And it was a really, really wonderful time with these guys. Here's another picture of Tirana. In the evening, we went to another Reformed Baptist church. Next one. And you don't see it here, but here's cafes and everything. And we're talking October, right? It's very warm. People are outside in the evening until 10, 11 at night. And this was on our way to the evening service of the other church. This was the evening service of the other church. Another Reformed Baptist church, recently become Reformed. Young man, humble, godly, eager to learn. See, this is what Come Over and Help does. We try to not to meddle in their affairs. We try to serve. We try to come alongside of them, to connect them with the sound contacts that we already have, and let them do the work. And where there is true financial need, we help. We don't pay pastors' salaries. What we do is we sponsor specific projects. And we were invited to this worship service. You see how many young people? It was almost entirely young people. They have a thriving university ministry. It would be so great if a group of our young people would be able to go and have a trip like that and see what's going on around the world. Then the next one, then I went back to Austria. And the next one. So here's a photo of, I need to brag a little bit and do a little bit of tourism advertisement. This is the province where Martina and I are from. This is the mountains that we have after seeing the beautiful Macedonian and Kosovarian and Albanian mountains. I had to show that we have some nice mountains too. The next one, this is my hometown where I was. You even get for free a part of my hand for no extra payment. And, you know, just to show you, providentially there's a tramway here. That was my professional beginning. I was a tramway driver exactly on this line through the city of Linz, where I'm from, and I was also happy to visit with my grandma. This is my grandma, or Oma. We call them Oma too in German. As you know, German and Dutch are quite similar or pretty similar. And she's going to be 97, and every time I come and I can pass through Austria, I visit with her. My mother and I take her with the wheelchair and go always the same route, and we talk. And she's getting a little bit demented now, but she always looked at me and said, oh, Sasha, you're here, you know. And that is so wonderful, you know. Don't forget the elderly and care for them. It was wonderful to see her again. Every time I leave, I don't know, is it the last time? But it was good to see her. The next one, please. And then I flew back from Austria to Frankfurt to go back to the United States, and that was a whirlwind trip. There was a lot happening, and this is us taxiing out. I'm pretty proud of this picture because this is the same plane that we're sitting in, and on the way back to the United States. So that was a whirlwind trip. It was very encouraging. It's kind of strange because you go there and It's funny. Originally, I was on the receiving end when I was in Austria in a very small church, and missionaries from America would come, or mission societies, and you know, they would parachute in and they would tell us what's up, you know, and what we have to do. And now I'm one of those who go to places, and I've learned you don't go in there and you say, look, we show you how to do it. No, we don't want to be those guys. We want to go and we want to ask, how can we help you? And they will tell us and we will help them as much as we can. So there's a reason for everything. And having been on the receiving end in Austria when mission societies would come, I can hope to avoid some of the mistakes that we have experienced. And it was a very encouraging trip. I'm always the one who leaves, I think, most encouraged. Tired, but very encouraged. It was a wonderful, wonderful trip. Apart from the fact that at the airplane they gave me wine to drink, and I don't drink a whole lot of alcohol. And I got so chipper that I bought a whole lot of stuff on the airplane that I didn't need, even including a piece of an airplane. I don't know. I've already repented for. I wasn't drunk. I was just chipper, you know. So this was the big downside. But I also bought a wallet, which I actually needed. Anyway, so this was the trip. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, sir. Yeah, that's a good question. In Albania, I needed a translator. I could speak a little Italian with them because all the Albanians know Italian for the reason that for many years they can receive Italian television. So when I speak with a waiter, I would speak in Italian. But preaching, I don't know a word in Albanian. I needed a translator. In Latvia, I teach in English. Most of the students understand English, but they have real-time translation in their ear. For those who don't speak English, there sits a translator in another room, and he will translate it. Usually they have two, one into Latvian and another one into Russian, because there's a Russian minority. It's not, it's 30% of the Latvians are actually Russians from back from the Soviet Union. So I speak in English, and they translate it in one or two languages. Austria, of course, German, and with all those Austrian and German contacts, I was able to speak in German. So I often need translators. Yes?
What would be the religious background of these nations? Roman Catholic?
Yeah. Austria, of course, Roman Catholic, and increasingly atheistic, and an increasing amount of Muslims. For the first time a few years ago, the Muslims have become more than Protestants, even nominally. Latvia has their own language. It's a standalone language. It's not similar to anything else. And they're just a couple of million of people. So that's a standalone language that you can't use much otherwise. The Albanians also have their own language. But I think you can hear Slavic and Italian elements, Romanic elements and Slavic elements. In Albania, so they're all pretty standalone languages. Only the German language, of course, you have about 110 million people who speak German. So that's a little bit of a challenge sometimes. Or religions, you ask religions. Albanian Muslim, but very liberal Islam, just kind of cultural Islam. The Germans, Lutheran and Roman Catholic, and Latvians, atheist. Atheist and Lutheran. There was a strong German influence with Latvia, but the Lutheranism is very liberal, of course. Rita.
Did you hear much about Ukraine while you were there?
About the Ukraine? Yes. I hear that the seminary had to be suspended officially in Kyiv, but they continued underground seminary. A lot of Russian pastors, who were also my former students, had to flee Russia because Putin has mobilized all men from 18 through 60 have to join the military. And immediately a million of young men have fled the country. And many of the pastors, they didn't want to fight against the Ukrainians. So they fled the country. So it's not looking good in Ukraine, but it's not looking good for the Russian brothers too. you know, there seems to be the situation that two godless nations are fighting against each other, and among the fatalities are many Christians. But it gives the churches in the surrounding nations, in Poland, in the Czech Republic, in Slovakia, and all of these nations, a good chance to minister to refugees. So that's the upside. And they do, with the little they have. They house them in their own homes. They really care for them. So that's a good opportunity. Yeah.
Well, there's a Reformed minister there, whose name I can't pronounce, that went to Kampen in the Netherlands. And apparently they have an underground seminary, which is, must be what you're talking about.
Are you talking about Reverend Hakkebord? Yeah, here, I don't know where Hakkebord went to seminary, but he hangs in there. He didn't leave. The Hakkebords hang in there in the Ukraine, and so do many others. They don't even think about leaving. They continue their work boldly. It's amazing what these men and women are contributing and being willing to give, even pay the utmost price for Jesus. No, it affects the other countries. I mean, those surrounding countries, they send as much aid as they can, although they have little themselves. They house refugees, they pray for them, they try to deliver. When we want to give aid to Ukrainians or to Russians, we do it often through the Latvians, because the Latvians have become kind of the gateway, at least for us, that come over and help to the whole former Soviet Union. So they are all connected. They encourage each other. I know of a Russian pastor who is very well connected with us. He went to Turkey on vacation when all this started. And he hasn't come back yet with his family because he would immediately be drawn into the military. And they are just sent on the front line and they're being used as cannon fodder. You know, they're just being killed by the tens of thousands right now, the Russian soldiers. So very bad. Anything? Yes.
You've gone multiple times over this area. Is it, do you visit the same people every time, or are you mixing different trips each year? What's your recovery?
Yeah, I've never been to Albania before. I was asked to meet up to take a look at possible new ministries that we can support in Albania. I usually focus on Latvia. Latvia is usually, that's the people I know most. But also Czech Republic, because it's so close to Austria, and the Germans. I usually mix the come over and help interests with the own ministries that I know from the past. And so, anything else?
Sure.
Yes.
Are families and churches allowed to have Christian schools in most of those countries, or is there pressure to eliminate Christian schools?
Yeah, that's a good question. The German group that I told you about, they are dead set on starting a Christian school, probably in the country that is most strictly regulated and is most hostile to Christian education. They will jump through all the hoops. But to be very honest with you, most of these countries do not yet fully understand the need for Christian education. And that is one of the reasons why I teach so much apologetics and worldview, to slowly help them to understand that our Christianity must play out in all areas. The Latvians more and more, I think, see it, but it's very hard in this country because education is highly regulated. Keep in mind, the seminary is also Christian education. And the seminary in Latvia, for example, is not accredited. They need six international PhDs, six worldwide accredited PhDs in order to be even considered for accreditation. So with me on the faculty, I said, use mine. Now two of the faculty members are planning. We have organized contacts in the Netherlands so they can get PhDs, so for the seminary to get accredited. But other than that, there's no accreditation. It's the same in Austria. They must, most of the time, they must kind of declare themselves as homeschoolers and then have kind of school as a homeschool co-op and then slowly increase. But that's a weakness that still has to be it's very hard in Europe. It's very regulated. The EU is very hostile to what they call parallel societies, which means the Christians mainly, because the Muslims have all the freedoms. But for Christians, it's very hard. Although they're doing it. They're doing it in Austria. I think they're beginning it in Latvia. They think about it in Albania. In Albania, they can homeschool. It becomes more and more of a topic for them to do Christian education. Okay, I don't want to take too much of your Time anymore? Yes, one more.
Years ago, I talked to some missionary from Uganda, and he said that they were more ripe in Uganda for revival than in our own country. Did you make that comparison there?
Yeah, I've never been to Uganda, but it's hard to speak on that because God sends revival when He wills, and He has sent revival in the most hopeless of situations. I mean, tomorrow is October 31st, 1517. I mean, a vast revival, one of the greatest in the history of the world, began with the nailing of the 95 Theses on the door of an obscure church in Wittenberg. I always say October 30th, 1517, there was no hope in Europe. And October 31st, the world was starting to get on fire with the gospel. So it's hard for me to speak on that. But one thing I can tell you about Africa, and I don't want to lump them all together, you got to understand one thing about Africa. You preach the gospel, or you preach, or you speak, and everybody's quickly excited about it. And then you leave the village, and then come the Mormons, and the same amount of people, maybe even the same people, are excited. So the hard thing in these countries is to not mix up excitement with true conversions. Because those in Latvia, those in Albania, to be a Christian, it really costs something. You're being ostracized from your society, and they usually stay Christians. So it's hard to say who is ripe for revival. I can tell you America needs revival, and I'm praying almost on a daily basis for that. But it's entirely up to God how He wants to do it. And I'm saying this as hope. Even in the worst of situations, God can speak into them and change everything overnight. Yeah. All right, I think I'll leave it at that, and let us close with a word of prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we thank You for, again, You building Your kingdom around the world. We thank You for all these ministers, those we have seen and elders, and those we don't even know about, who faithfully plow away in faraway countries or close countries to minister to the people in their countries and nations. Oh Lord, let us see more and more of the building of Your kingdom. Oh, we so long to see it also in this nation. We seek and we long to see revival. Oh Lord, grant it to us in our own hearts, in our families, in our churches. Be with us and equip the missionaries, especially those who are discouraged right now for one reason or the other. Help us and keep us and show us where we can help, that Your name be glorified and Your people be blessed and the harvest be brought in for the glory of Your name. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you, brothers and sisters. See you this evening.